Hello again, and welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin, the host. True Wealth is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane. Coins Plus is your full service, a rare coin and precious metals broker, dealer, and depository service. Been doing business in the Spokane area a little over 20 years. We've always been actively involved in the purchase and sale, buying and selling of all forms of precious metals. We've moved a lot of silver and gold over the years. We have dealt in a tremendously kind of phenomenal amount of rare coins over the years. We still obviously do every day. We buy and sell coins and collections, and we specialize in wealth and capital preservation. We like to help people preserve their finances, preserve their, you know, their wealth, and to be good stewards with the finances they've been given. There's a lot of innuendo from society about how to invest, but there's a very, very, very small overlap with truth and reality there, and we like to help people get straightened up that way. We are precious metals experts, I think, portfolio building experts, and we do use a very balanced approach. And we have the highest rated depository service in the Northwest United States, I say. Probably top 10 in the nation. I don't know of a lot of privately held depository services. I know of a few, and I know of a few that are very phenomenal, like down in the Vegas area and Palm Springs, but not a lot other than that. So we offer a very unique service that way. The building is extremely secure. It was built from the ground up to be what it is today, a high-security precious metals facility. We designed the building. Not only I've discussed how secure the vaults in and of themselves are, but I've never discussed how the building was constructed specifically. And it was a very strategic kind of a hassle to try to place the safes inside the building so there's no access from outside walls, to try to use the structural advantages and rigidity of the building to secure the vaults further. There was just a lot of thought and energy and effort that went into this building. And I can tell you, folks, when you secure your valuables here, and there's a lot of people that have been doing it for a long time, they're very, very safe, very, very secure. We do not keep a key to your safe. People call and they say, if I buy some gold or silver, can you put it in my safe deposit box for me? Absolutely not. We have a guard key which keeps people out, and it requires us to let people in. But other than that, we do not have keys to anyone's safe. If a key is lost, you have to put down a key deposit when you buy when you rent a safe deposit box. And if a key is lost, we have to fully rekey the box. That's if one key is lost. The keys that we use for this purpose are irreplaceable. They can't be remanufactured. The entire lock needs to be replaced. The company that makes the locks of these specific locks has made that rule that you just cannot replace a key. And so we've gone to great lengths to just keep your security at a maximum in this case. And so we can't even get in your boxes. And trust me, we can't. It's assured. And we have dual locking systems, time locks at night. So even if someone tries to get in the safe, if they somehow figured out the combo, the time locks will not allow them in. We have dual locks where it takes two employees that know two separate combinations to open the doors, or in some cases, four employees each can know a half of a combo, et cetera. So we deal in a lot of valuables, a lot of, you know, high value compact items. I really think that's what wealth is all about. I think that's true wealth. I think hard assets, the Bible's very, very clear about hard assets. And you might think, we're so smart now. We've figured out we're so smart. We've figured out how to make money out of thin air. It's like, wow, we are bright, aren't we? Or maybe our con artists have just gotten really good. Either way, we're not that bright when we're making money out of thin air, folks. You got nothing to show for it. Nothing. And don't be fooled thinking you're so intelligent. And also, folks, do not try to convince your stockbroker. I am not kidding you. Do you understand money is their driver? Money's the answer to everything. And there's people, I mean, it's interesting. There's people who listen and go, well, he's doing the same thing, trying to make money. But the thing is, I back everything I do up biblically. The only thing your broker will say is, if you look in the Bible, he'll say, cast your bread upon many waters or something. I mean, there's nothing that says invest in air, you know. I mean, even Solomon talks about his ownership. You're talking about the single wisest, richest man in the history of the world. If you don't believe it, folks, just read in the Bible how much gold he had accumulated to build the temple. It is the largest accumulation of gold at any one location in the history of planet Earth, which eventually the Babylons took, so they had to be walking in some pretty good cash for a while. But the point is, it was to the tune of like today's standards of almost $1 trillion. So there's no trillionaires out there today, folks. You can say, well, it was government owned. Well, it was all Solomon's. And the fact is, God's word was faithful. One thing that you got to remember there that I find interestingly ironic is Rehoboam, his son. By the way, I do this all the time. Coins Plus's phone number, if you happen to want to call, is 444-0044 in Spokane, outside toll-free, 877-TAP-COIN, 877-827-2646, or through our website, coinsplus.com, you can email us. We have a contact form there. Solomon's son, Rehoboam, just kind of baffles me. He was the bad guy. Bad, okay? And if you really look through Solomon's life, Solomon, got a blessing from God, to put it lightly. I think we all know that he got incredible wisdom, right? We know that God had some kind of an agreement with Solomon where he said, I will give you, tell me what you want, basically. And he said, I want wisdom so I can help the people. And God said, you know, Solomon, because you have asked for wisdom and not riches, I am going to give you both wisdom and riches. And Solomon, he wanted to help the people. But the problem is, it's horsepower. You know, you get all that wisdom and you are the smartest guy that ever lived. We don't even know what that's like. We don't even know what it's about. But what we do know is there is a ton of power in that, and it may just come natural. I don't know. But Solomon was able to accumulate and acquire, you know, and then the Bible tells us that Solomon was so wise that people would come from all around to listen to him speak. So if we go into 1 Kings 4 here, let me see. This is crazy. If you want an idea of his wealth, I don't want to go back too far in the scripture, but there's a bunch of Geber, the son of Oz, and all that. I don't think you need to know that. Solomon ruled over the kingdoms from the river to the land of the Philistines and to the border of Egypt. They brought tribute and served Solomon all the days of his life. Solomon's provision for one day was 30 cores of fine flour and 60 cores of meal. So we go down here and we find out a core is, what is this? Come on, baby, wake up. Let's see. Oh, come on. I like it where they tell me it's a measure. It's about 60 gallons, okay? So per day, his provision for one day was 1,800 gallons of flour and 3,600 gallons of meal. Now I'm going to continue to go. This is just his home where he had people and workers, I suppose. 10 fat oxen, 20 pasture-fed oxen, 100 sheep besides deer. This is a daily food for his establishment, for his castle, his temple, where all these people served him. I mean, this was like a humongous mega resort beyond your dreams, right? So we got 20 pasture-fed oxen, 100 sheep besides deer, gazelles, roebucks, and fattened fowl. For he had dominion over everything west of the river from the Tipsha, even to Gaza, over all the kings west of the river. And he had peace on all sides around about him. That's a sign of God's blessing, isn't it? So Judah and Israel lived in safety, every man under his vine and his fig tree, from Dan even to Beersheba, all the days of Solomon. That's a blessing. That's God just put a hand of favor on Solomon that is second to none. Probably one of the best examples. Well, it is. The best examples in the history of the world of blessing and riches and peace and honor. I mean, unbelievable, unbelievable. Solomon had 40,000 stalls of horses for his chariots and 12,000 horsemen. Think about this. 40,000 stalls of horses for his chariots and 12,000 horsemen, 12,000 men to ride horses. It says those deputies provided for King Solomon and all who came to King Solomon's table, each in his month, they left nothing lacking. They also brought barley and straw for the horses and swift steeds to the place where it should be, each according to his charge. Now, God gave Solomon wisdom and very great discernment and breadth of mind, like the sand that is on the seashore. I don't know for sure what that means, but I think it means that Solomon had this insane breadth of knowledge. I think he had some kind of a God-ordained wisdom where he could get everything. He could understand anything. You know, there's just people like that. You guys, you might know someone like that. I've known some people that way that I've really admired a lot. I had a doctor when I was a young child. We had a friend who was a doctor, and he read a lot, but he was just a sweethearted guy. Knowledge, knowledge, knowledge. I mean, anything. And then when I got into banking, I had a boss's boss who was the most pompous little guy that, I mean, just an obnoxious jerk. And he would call me and just, I had done very well for the company. My numbers were always at the top of the top. And so, you know, I stood out like a sore thumb. Well, he had to be smarter and better than me, but he would call me just, one of his games was just to ask 1,000 questions to try to poke holes in your logic or whatever. And I, although I couldn't stand the guy, I really enjoyed the challenge. He was so knowledgeable. And one thing, when you do a ton of consumer lending, it's a great way to start a career out because you are loaning money to every single person from every walk of life. Sure, there's people that don't borrow a lot of money, but they'll go to a furniture store and use 90 days same as cash, or they'll use 12 months no payment, no interest. I don't. I think cash is cash, but there's a lot of people that'll do it that are even from a lot higher walks of life, doctors and lawyers and stuff. And so you get exposed to a ton of things. So anyway, this guy, Mr. Turner, he had to be called, even though his name is Scott Turner. He was brilliant but obnoxious. I could, you know, really bad personality. No one liked him. I took it as a challenge. His level of knowledge, his broad breadth of knowledge was just inspiring to me. And so, you know, he was given wisdom, but with his wisdom came misery. And everybody said he should have been, you know, some kind of an attorney because he was built that way. So basically it says here in the Bible that now God gave Solomon wisdom. And see, this is an additional thing, very great discernment and breadth of mind like the sand that is in the seashore. So let's think about, those are three key things that are critical for a believer. You know, this is, okay, Solomon received this from God. The Bible tells us clearly, ask for wisdom and God will give it to you. Wow, think about that. How many of you really ask for wisdom? How many of you think of wisdom as this unreachable thing you'll never have? Or how many of you are foolish enough to think you have it when you don't? Or how many of you don't realize the importance of wisdom? Wisdom is the ability to circumnavigate life in the most appropriate way. Ignorance isn't bliss. If you go through life ignorant, you get knocked around and kicked around. God wants us wise, but God wants us to ask for it. It's so clear over and over in the Bible, ask for it and I'll give it to you. But he always says, ask. So we've got to go before him and ask. We want to use it. Why? Because we've got to align our will with him. We've got to get it from him for the right purposes. And Solomon's desire was to help his people, not to get rich. God said, you know what? I mean, basically God said, here, I'm going to give you the magic stone and of wisdom. And now, and by the way, with it comes all these other things. The Bible in Proverbs is crystal clear. I was just reading it with my daughter yesterday in Proverbs 3. It says wisdom brings, riches and honor in life. I mean, riches are just part of wisdom, okay? Because you circumnavigate the world better than others. But we've got three things that God says Solomon had. First was wisdom, okay? Wisdom is the application of knowledge. It's knowing how to apply knowledge. Wisdom is understanding things. It's wisdom and understanding. Okay, then we go on to the next one, discernment. Okay, this is a deep one. And people that are truly blessed, just like Solomon had this deep, deep, deep level of wisdom, people that truly have deep, deep, deep discernment are rare. That's one thing I've found in the church. So many people think they have discernment. So many people confuse their preferences with, God's justification, I guess you'd call it. I mean, we don't want to sanctify our preferences, but we do. We think our preferences are sanctified by God, and they're not. They're our preferences. That's different. Your desires, your feelings, your preferences are not discernment. When your feelings begin to come upon you in a spiritual manner that literally conflict in a way with your flesh, and I don't mean you're going to have a combative time, but when you're like, wow, you know, that's coming on you strong, and you're like, I mean, I've had this happen, you know, time and again, and I'm sure you all have too, where the spirit just goes after you, and you can't get something off your mind, or something's coming on. I mean, I've had a lot of that over the years. I won't get into it. But discernment is the ability to see spiritual things. It's the ability to make spiritual decisions in a physical world. It's the ability to comprehend good and evil. And one thing that really, really hits me in the heart, you know, Jesus was crystal clear about the tares among the wheat, the wolf among the sheep, right? Or the sheep, the wolves in sheep's clothing and all this in the church. They're all over. Pastors in general are evangelical in nature, or they might be teachers by nature, but they're very typically not a discerning kind. Why? Because I'm going to be honest. Somebody with high levels of discernment may appear a bit divisive on the surface, okay? They're going to say, that's not good. He's not good. No. You know, they're wise. There's a depth of wisdom where they just know. And a pastor's job is to open the door, open his arms, educate, feed the flock. So the pastor, what the pastor needs to do is have the wisdom to acquire somebody with discernment around him that he can trust, okay? It's like the president has the Secret Service. If anyone comes to visit the president, they got to go through the whole background check with the Secret Service. They got to pass a smell test if it's any significant kind of relationship. Well, spiritually, why wouldn't we be doing the same thing? And I have seen over and over again, I have seen it where the tares among the wheat, and I've seen people come into churches and join small groups and literally devastate things. People that appear super spiritual, that they just want to grovel and they want to complain. And I've seen people that, well, you know, they can always find something wrong with everything, and they're very diplomatic. They're very diplomatic. They use church speak in a way that just, it's all about their love and gentleness and what's their heart really just wants peace. And, you know, but they just chip away and chip away and chip away and chip away. And what they do is they take the focus off of building up. They're tearing down. And that's what you need to look at in the church and in the body, is the devil comes to steal, kill, destroy, okay? Steal, you know, there's so many things he can take. What's he going to take? Well, the fruits of the Spirit, you know, love, joy, peace, patience. Those things are going to become, you know, they're going to be stripped out of their actions. Their actions are going to, they're not going to be coming from a point of love. They're going to be coming from a point of spiritual concern. And it's not going to be joy because they're spiritually concerned. And they're not going to have peace because they're spiritually concerned. And, you know, it goes on. The patience, it's a spiritual concern, so it's urgent. And I've seen this come into churches. We need to build the body up. Let no unwholesome talk come out of your mouths except that which is edifying to another. That's Ephesians 4:29. None of us are that perfect, but that's what God says we should shoot for. We need to edify and build up. You go to church, you build people up. You listen to their stories, you hear it. You find out, you build the body up. There's another level of frustration, and that is when people are in the burrow pit of disaster and they refuse to get out. And I have a fairly decent, I don't know if I'd call him a friend, but a very strong acquaintance who's in a terrible situation. He adopted his grandson and from his own mother. It's just a mess, and this kid's going off the rails now, and he won't deal with it properly. And the situation's going to explode. He doesn't want anybody else involved because his wife works in a certain legal environment where she doesn't want police to know, and it's just, you know, we've got to reach out. We've got to stop the damage or it gets worse and worse and worse. So anyway, there I go again. Now, God gave Solomon wisdom and very great discernment and breadth of mind, like the sand that's on the seashore. So Solomon had understanding, he had deep spiritual insight, and he had incredible knowledge. That means that if someone came to Solomon with anything, He either got it immediately or he asked a few questions and then got it. Okay, he had it. He just had, I don't know how, I don't know why. And maybe because he was blessed by God, he had an overview of realities and you know, he just knew. That's what they're telling us. It's pretty cool. Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the sons of the East and all the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all men, than Ethan the Ezrahite, Hermon, Calcol, and Darda, the sons of Mahol, and his fame was known in all the surrounding nations. He also spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. How they know that, I don't know. He spoke of trees from the cedar that is in Lebanon, even to the hyssop that grows on the wall. He knew everything about plants. He spoke also of animals and birds and creeping things and fish. So he knew everything about animals and birds and insects and fish. Men, now here's what's awesome. Men came from all peoples to hear the wisdom of Solomon, from all the kings of the earth who had heard of his wisdom. people came from all around to listen to this guy, folks. This guy had it going on. I mean, this is pretty cool stuff. You know, this was the horsepower of the Lord. And I like where it goes into this. Now, Hiram, king of Tyre, sent his servants to Solomon when he heard that they had anointed him king in place of his father, for Hiram had always been a friend of David. Then Solomon sent word to Hiram, saying, "You know that David, my father, was unable to build a house for the name of the Lord, his God, because of the wars which surround him." And it goes on and on. Hiram, king of Tyre, King Hiram of Tyre, I prefer to call him, was one of Solomon's buds. And they together did amazing stuff. They developed the world in a way we don't even know, folks. They sent people all over the world looking for gold for the temple. This, I believe, is one of the main methods by which North and South America were eventually populated. They found rocks in Venezuela that were written, you know, 1800 BC or whatever, where they had a shipwreck. They tried to write on a rock on a point, which was a practical thing, you know, to do when you had when you landed in a situation that they. But the problem was in South America, they said that they sacrificed a child to Molech. Well, that started the blood curse on the land of South America, leading to eventually the Aztecs and the Incas and the rampant bloodshed down there. And that country's, that whole continent's been cursed ever since. North America, they sent the Egyptian, I think the Egyptian, well, in other words, the descendants of Cain went to South America, and theory is that the Egyptians came to the north. Well, the Egyptians, you know, were highly influenced by Judeo-Christian religion. Now, if you read the early spiritual writings of the Egyptians, it's very interesting. One problem is the archaeologists have labeled things that they find, like old spiritual writings in Egypt, they've labeled them the Book of the Dead. Well, it's not the Book of the Dead. It was like they had 40 commandments. They're in their 40 commandments are our specific 10 commandments. They're in there. They just expounded them further. They had the exact 10 commandments of the Jews right in there, crystal clear. And I mean right there. But and they had some really cool stuff to read. It applied very heavily to their time. It talked very specifically. Some of the commandments were, you will never, you know, there's certain things you won't do to the water because the water is life. And there were things about, you know, preserving nature. And we're so nauseated by this because of the EPA now. We're like, oh, gracious, you know, but really, if you live off the land like that, that's so important to not pollute the water. They live in the water. They live of the water, from the water. You don't pollute the water, right? That's why when Moses said to Pharaoh, you know, this is going to happen and that's going to happen. And when the water got turned to blood, oh boy, nobody had any liquid. Folks, you got to understand, no liquid, no rain, no nothing. People died. I mean, it was a scourge, and you had, you know, frogs everywhere and locusts. I mean, it would be stinky, filthy, hideous death all around because people lived on it. And so where I'm going with that is King Hiram of Tyre and Solomon sent these people out all around the world. Well, they also sent, Solomon sent his people out, the Egyptians and the descendants of Cain. Well, the Jews and Egyptians landed in North America, and I believe that's why North America is blessed. I think the land was touched by God's people. There's just so many similarities that I won't get into today and the way things were originally developed. We found huge, though people don't realize the largest pyramid on earth is in the U.S. It's like in Oklahoma or something. I haven't studied it for a while, but they thought it was a mountain until they went to dig into it and found out it was a pyramid. Go look that up. It's pretty cool. Humongous. I mean, they built some amazing things, and they talk about the mound people and all this stuff. Like, they don't know who they were. They were people that got dropped off here, left here. You know, the it's obvious that the Gulf of Mexico spread further. The Baja went north. You know, there's all this evidence deep, deep in the lands of Arizona that the Spaniards had ships. They found ships out in the ocean or out in the desert. Buried where the water used to come up. And so there was a whole different set of waterways back then. I also believe handily that, you know, 3,800 years ago or whatever it was, or 4,000 years ago, the Atlantic Ocean was much more narrow than it is today. We know right now that it's expanding at 100 meters a year. And that's after it slowed down for 4,000 years after the Great Flood, the tectonic plate shifting, and so on. So the actual journey may have been much shorter, but that's not that big of a deal. I mean, there's people. I know a guy in Tahiti who teaches people how they used to navigate by the stars, and he has navigated a boat by homemade boat and sail from Tahiti to Fiji just by the stars, 4,000 some miles. I mean, they could get around. We always think men of old were dumb.
Well, they were dumb. We're smart now because we have we genetically modify our foods, and we mix a bunch of synthetic. We like sugar and we like fat. And then our money is actually just a piece of paper. It's a promise backed by nut. You know, we're so smart, aren't we? I mean, I'll admit, technologically, we've done some really cool stuff. I don't think it's fair to say that before the flood, man hadn't done something similar anyway. When you look at the hieroglyphs that we found in the Temple of Abydos, which, you know, in the Book of Adam and Eve and the old writings of the Midrash and whatever they're called, the Hiram or the Haddam, the old Jewish writings that they talk about before the flood, even Adam was warned there would be two destructions of earth, one by fire, one by water. We don't know anything about the one by fire. So it says they built erected monuments of stone and brick, one to endure the fire, one for the water. Well, you know, the Great Pyramid's covered in salt inside and blah, blah, blah. 60 miles north, the exact dead center of all landmass on earth, which has not moved, nor has it ever experienced an earthquake, because all the tectonic plates of the earth circle around it. This is the epicenter for some odd reason. I don't know why, but somehow they knew. Whoever built the Great Pyramid right there, one of three locations on earth with a big enough piece of bedrock that was flat enough to house a 13.5-acre flat object that weighed however many millions of tons or billions of tons. You know, on and on it goes. It's unbelievable. But the Temple of Abydos right there that's where you see these images of helicopters and planes and electricity. This is written, this is literally in the hieroglyphs, crystal clear. You don't even need to think hard to figure it out. And so I like the archaeologists, experts that say, well, that's really not a picture of a plane and a helicopter. Or in other words, it's like four planes and three different kinds of helicopters that are all like exact copies of what we have today, to a point where you're like, no way, right? They're like, no, that's not what it is. What they were doing is they were writing letters in hieroglyph, and they were in error, and so they stopped. And then they, you know, it's just like, go away. It just doesn't even make sense at all. But it's you know, so I believe there's a high likelihood that they had incredible technology. Men lived 700, 800, 900 years. You don't think they had a little bit of time to think about some of these things? Look at we accomplish in 70. And then we get someone like Nikola Tesla, who did phenomenal things. He had his big tower on the East Coast and told his friends in Siberia to watch. He was going to do something really cool after he said he'd created a death ray. And then we have the Tunguska event, the largest explosion ever recorded on Earth, that knocked out, you know, whatever it is, 500,000 acres or whatever it was of trees, just devastated everything. There's not one sign of a meteorite. There's no nuclear
residue, nothing. And then after that, they tear down his tower. You know, the guy was phenomenal. He had, when they were tearing down his tower, I can't remember the name of it right now. It was, he actually had tapped into the groundwater, and he wanted to provide electricity to everyone in the world. And he'd figured out, he'd go like 18 miles out of town and put lights in the ground, and they'd light up. He'd go to places people told him to do it, not where he chose. There's so many cool stuff. He dies instantly. The government seizes all of his stuff. And then after that, about in the next decade, we start to see all these UFOs and all these weird electrical phenomenons. And, you know, it goes on and on and on. A guy like that was, you know, he was an idiot savant. He had Asperger's. All indication is he had terrible social interaction abilities. And, you know, I mean, that's one man. And, you know, I've often thought, this is where I go on a tangent. We kill 3 out of 10 viable conceptions in America every day. 30% of all viable conceptions, good pregnancies that could produce a child, are killed by abortion. I believe that men are born with a series of talents built into them, a destiny. Who have we killed? You think of what the impact of one man can have on Earth. When we are aborting people, babies, what are we ruining? I mean, what talent pools, what skill sets are we destroying? Something worth thinking about. So anyway, it talks about how wise Solomon was. Men came from all around to listen to him. Solomon then, it goes on about how much he gave Hiram. 20,000 cores of wheat as food for his household, 20 cores, and it goes on and on and on and on. You guys get the point. Solomon had a truckload of wisdom. And Solomon, after all that, specifically put his money in hard assets. Now, you say, well, yeah, but like I said at the beginning of the show, we're smarter now. We do it different now. You don't think Solomon, in his infinite wisdom, could have come up with fiat currency? Think about fiat currency. Here's how it works. Someone who's really rich looks at the sheeple and says, boy, I hope they're dumb enough to buy this one. Now, here's what we're going to do, folks. You're going to give me all your money, and I'm going to give you a piece of paper. And that piece of paper is going to say it's good for a buck. After you're out of money, I'm going to start to loan you those pieces of paper, and you're going to have to pay me back in work labor. And, you know, this is what fiat currency is. This is what has bankrupted our nation. I've dwelt over and over recently on the deficit equating to $67,000 for every man, woman, and child, $335,000 for every tax-paying citizen. I've gone off about it being $2.45 million in unfunded liabilities per tax-paying citizen. $2.45 million for every tax-paying citizen. Think about that. Just rest on that. If you work and you produce a tax, you owe $2.4 million. If you're on Social Security, disability, whatever, you're the reason why. I'm not saying you don't deserve it. I'm just telling you how the system works. And then we get Trump in there, and we've got ruckus and racket, don't we? Oh, my goodness. This stuff about wiretapping and... Folks, we're never going to know the truth. And this this confirmation of Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch, folks, this guy, they intentionally picked a guy that is so black and white, so blameless, such an originalist that the left, the Dems, they have no excuse. They approved him. The Senate approved him in 2009. For his Supreme Court or for his appellate court seat. They passed him unanimously, folks. 2009, that's when Obama was in office. Politics have run amok. I sincerely believe there's never been a time like this in this nation. The Democrats cannot get over the fact they lost the election. They'll say,
well, that's not it. He's just so obnoxious. He's so rude. And all the mean things he said. And he was working with the Russians, and the Russians got him into office, and blah, blah, blah. There's no evidence. And yeah, he's not the smoothest tongue. We'll say he is no silver tongue fox. But he is the president of these United States of America. What do we look like to the rest of the world? The left is a train wreck. I say that they are digging their grave deeper and deeper and deeper. Since Obama got into office, they have lost over 1,000 seats nationally from the municipal level all the way up. They don't get it. They refuse to cooperate. They refuse to unite. In time, as you know, in my old age, as I've seen presidents come and go, it's always the Republicans that say, I want to unite both parties. The Dems say, I want to give you free stuff, and I want to take away from the rich, and I want to do... And it's like, it's the Dems preach socialism. The conservatives are always preaching, they're the ones preaching moderateness. They're like, well, we can work this out. We can compromise. We can fix the divide. But no, folks, they won't allow it to happen, and they are hanging themselves. Let them do it. People are sick of this mess. Their behavior, folks, simply is pathetic. It's all over the fact that they lost the election. Last week, I had some notes on Charles Murray, actually the bell curve. I think I won't get into that a little bit today here. Oh, by the way, I hope you're watching the Zags game tonight. Gonzaga Bulldogs playing for the NCAA championship game. I mean, folks, Spokane, Washington, they're playing the North Carolina Tar Heels. I mean, these guys have had the coach for the Tar Heels. This will be his 100th championship game. This is the first time we've been through. So we've had one, two, three. This will be our fourth championship game. This is big. This is a big deal. Congrats to those boys. They're phenomenal. You know, the Tar Heels, they have recruiters, and they even have scandals about how they get all these kids out of high school without they talk the high school into giving them a diploma in order to bring them on up. And then they have tutors take their classes for them because these kids are so thick. All they can do is play ball. And I mean, they have scandals. We don't have scandals at Gonzaga. We just got kids going to school. So it's a pretty cool thing. Give them your support. I'm stoked. I hope they do. I know they can do it. They'll do it. They're going to win it tonight. So that's pretty cool. So I've lately been trying to plow through a little by little every day on the Bill of Rights. So I talked a little bit about your freedom of speech. I talked about your right to bear arms, of which all the other Bill of Rights go right down the toilet without. Third, kind of a, guarantees the Army cannot force homeowners to house and feed their soldiers. Those were different days. Obviously, it belongs there. But apparently, this was a problem. And I know from studying history, it was terrible. They would show up at people's houses and confiscate all their meal, all their grain, all everything. Everything they had to feed their pigs and their horses and their cattle for the winter, they'd kill their animals by stealing all their food and say, I mean, it was bad. During the Civil War, it was out of control that they were still doing that stuff. And during, you know, so anyway, I understand why it's there. Then it says the Fourth Amendment. The Third Amendment says no soldier shall in time of peace be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in the manner to be prescribed by law. Fourth Amendment, one of my favorites, protects people from the government improperly taking their property, papers, people without a valid warrant. This one, folks, one thing I'll tell you, we're messing with so much of this stuff. It's the left keeps pushing these agendas and the right caves and caves and caves, right? Freedom of speech. We got hate speech, and we got, you know, the right to bear arms. We need to take away any guns that hold more than a half of a bullet, you know, and bow and assault rifles. You can just kill everybody. Folks, it's so ridiculous. You've got to use your head when it comes to numbers. there are so many millions of assault rifles, if you want to call it that. I'm going to check something out here and do a quick check. Okay, so there are currently, they say, okay, 14 million. They estimate there are 14 million AR-15s in America. 14 million. So every once in a while, every few months, somebody improperly uses one, we'll say. Is it right to make 14 million people pay, which actually probably equates to a lot of, that's probably 14 million families, you know, which affects 50 million people or whatever it is. Is it right to make 50 million people pay for the actions of three? This is what we're starting to do. And here's something you've got to understand, okay? In Judeo-Christian law, you cannot make other people pay for the sins of another person, okay? In communism, they do it all the time. If your father, you know, commits a crime, a violent crime against the government, sedition, the whole family dies. This is the new way of applying law in America. One man sins, the whole group pays. You know, they'll do this a little bit in the military to try to create teamwork and peer pressure in a positive direction. You know, one man gets something stolen out of his barracks and no one wants to admit who did it, so they all pay until it gets resolved. And they do calisthenics, and they work, and they work, and they don't get sleep, and they clean until someone finally says, all right, fine, I did it. That's different. This is a new mentality that is infiltrating America. We all have to pay for the sins of the few. All of our laws are beginning to be created in this manner, and we hype things up. I mean, it's everything from this opiate stuff. I mean, the testimonials I've heard on this stuff. I was talking to a friend of mine who's right in the middle of the DEA game, and he's like, you know, I was telling him specific stories of, you know, doctors making people, friends of mine, urine test because they take some painkillers or something, and just, you know, doctors they've known 20 years, things are just changing. And he said, well, a guy I know's daughter had a knee surgery, and they gave her a bottle of 130 milligram oxy whatevers. And that's all testimonial. It's not provable. It's just, it's testimonial, and it's hype, it's emotion. And we're starting to build laws based on this stuff. It's not good. You don't base laws on testimonial hype. And this is what we're doing. Every single time there's a shooting, it's not about that dirty, rotten jerk that, you know, and then they got the right caving, you know, for deeper and more invasive background checks and mental illness. Well, what happens to all these veterans that come home with PTSD? Are they mentally ill? Do you go strip away the guns of our veterans? You know, no, I don't think so. I think we've got to chill out. I mean, I just don't see the end in sight. The biggest problem is they tell us that we live in a democracy. We don't. We live in a republic with a democratic form of representative elections, okay? We elect our representatives in a democratic method, but other than that, we're a republic with a hard, firm, fast set of rules, which is what I'm talking about here today, the Bill of Rights. They're non-negotiable. But when you make people think we're a democracy, everything's up for debate, everything's up to negotiate. Facts don't matter. This is what I'm starting to see is facts don't matter. You listen to people's ignorance. I was just thinking today, Proverbs 18:2. I was listening to some moron on TV, this Bob Beckel that's on the 5 on the Fox. I mean, this guy, he just blurts ignorance, just bellows, bloviates
barf. I mean, he's ignorant. He just barfs out junk. Who in the world doesn't want to be wise? We just talked about the power of wisdom. But now we glorify antagonism and divisiveness, and it doesn't matter. Truth doesn't matter. People aren't impressed with it. It's sad, folks. A fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his own opinion. Proverbs 18:2. We've got to want to be wise. If a fool takes no pleasure in understanding, a wise man wants to understand. It says a fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his own opinion. A wise man wants to understand before he constructs an opinion. Be wise. We are in a very, very dangerous spot. We've got a strong faction of the left who can now comfortably say that the Constitution was written by a bunch of rich, white, slave-owning, racist bigots, and it's an old relic document that needs to be thrown out and replaced. I mean, this has been repeated by so many on the left. It's terrifying to me. It's like we need to revamp the Bible. I mean, that's the same logic. It's God's word. It's fact. I personally think, my opinion is, the Constitution is a divinely inspired document. You study the history of it. You study the men that made it. You study the process. You study the impossibility of it. You study the absolute divine intervention and providential approach, and it is divinely inspired. This nation was formed on God's word. This nation was formed to honor God, but we're being deceived. Deception will destroy. The devil comes to steal, kill, and destroy America. And now we care about what the world thinks, and we want to be everybody's friend, and we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, and we don't want to be hated, and we want to, and we're in debt up to our neck. We let everybody fleece our wealth. I mean, folks, we've done it. It is a bad, ridiculous situation. Politicians in general have zero financial, fiscal responsibility, zero. And it's out of control what's going on. Fourth Amendment, one of my favorites, as I said, and we're running out of time. What's new, right? This, I'll just bounce off this one. This just says that they cannot take your stuff away without a warrant. And they really shouldn't be doing it anyway. It's protecting you from them seizing your assets without a warrant. Well, the problem is, even with a warrant, when do they have a right to seize your assets? Well, now it's getting to the point they can seize them for unbelievable things. You start looking up civil asset forfeiture and you will not even believe it. Billions and billions of dollars a year seized from people just driving through little towns. I mean, it's out of control. Cops have too much power. I support law enforcement, but they don't understand where the lines crossed. I've seen it all. I won't get into it, but traffic stops and they inquire too much and people have some cash and they automatically assume, how can some little Hispanic kid have $3,800 cash? It must be a drug deal. They seize it. There's no way to get it back. It's an impossible situation, an impossible system. But you can't get politicians to change the laws. Why? Because you just drop the word drugs in there and they're like, ooh, we better run from that one. Now you drop the word terrorism and they're like, whoa, can't touch that one. I mean, folks, these things are all going to be used against the Christian church. I assure you, mark my words. The devil hates the Jews and the Christians. That is why Islam is the devil's religion. This is how he's empowering people to destroy God's people. Prepare yourselves. Fifth Amendment we'll touch on tomorrow. Basically, your right to a fair trial, your right to a bond, you know, the right to be treated by the courts properly, not to be held indefinitely without any kind of Mirandization or bond. Well, now we're doing that. We got the NDAA Act. We got all this garbage that, you know, you get my point. I mean, this stuff's concerning. It's not, I'm not an alarmist. I'm a factist. I'm an evidence guy, and we got a problem. So I'll try to get into this more on Wednesday. Get ready to go watch the Zags win. And folks, simple enough. I was just thinking this morning, this is such an amazing time to be buying in. The coins, the what I call the dirt is packed down. The value is packed into this stuff right now. There's no big crazy premiums. The market's not out of control. People are confused right now. They're waiting. And I'm telling you, portfolio pricing is so awesome right now. It's so smart. And your paper's inflated and there's so much, there's so much confusion globally. You don't even know what the dollar's worth. You don't even know where it's going. You don't even know what you have. You don't even know what it's going to take to retire. But you do know when you buy hard assets that you're going to have enough. It's always been the case. There's no exception. It maintains its buying power throughout history, period, bar none. Always does it. That doesn't mean you pick up the phone and call someone like Goldline with commissioned salespeople that will not guide you properly. We don't have any of that stuff. We're straight shooters. It's wholesale to the public. And I mean that. We're high volume, low margin. Our motto is honesty, integrity, and professionalism in every transaction. Coins Plus, you can call us 444-0044. Toll free 877-TAP-COIN or through our website at coinsplus.com. We do 401ks and IRAs literally every day. If you've got one, just give us a call. It's a cakewalk. It's a simple process. You get your money put into a secure money market fund. You can do whatever you want. We'll help you buy metals. You physically own the metals. You physically own the metals. You buy specific coins from us, and that's what you own for your 401k. It's not a pool account. It's not a, hey, what's mine? It's not, where they, it's segregated. It's yours. It goes into a secure trust, and there it stays. But rolling out is another huge option right now. Just give us a call. Again, 444-0044 in Spokane, 509 area code. Folks, I cannot tell you enough how important it is that you just do the right thing with your finances, and we'll help you do that. Thanks again, seriously, for tuning in. Thanks for supporting us. We appreciate it. Keep your prayers up for us. Praise God. Amen. Bye-bye. Have a great evening. Take care.